Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. 15 years ago, after Hurricane Michelle devastated Cuba, the government realized it needed to train emergency medical teams to deal with natural disasters. It figured this was not the last time severe weather or natural disasters would strike the island nation. Known as the Henry Reeve Brigade, it is a team of 8,000 medical professionals who are specially trained in dealing with disasters and epidemics. It has been deployed in 22 countries around the world since it began. It has responded to hurricanes in Guatemala, floods in Bolivia, and an earthquake in China, among countless other catastrophes. The local chapter of the Council of Canadians has nominated this medical team for a Nobel Peace Prize. In this interview, you will learn more about the Council of Canadians, the medical team's work, and how the Canadian government turned down a chance to let the Henry Reeve Brigade help it with its pandemic response. I'm so pleased to have with me today Rick Arnold, a member of the board of the Northumberland chapter of the Council of Canadians. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Can you tell us about Cuba's initial response to the pandemic and why it was so exemplary and got your attention?
Yes, Rob. Our chapter has been following for the last year all the developments during COVID-19 that have been taking place, and in particular some of the initiatives that remarkable initiatives that Cuba has undertaken in the last 12 months. We got interested in this partly because back in April of last year, we saw a news item which said that the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada rejected a request from about 34 First Nations in Manitoba for a medical contingent, pandemic-trained medical contingent, to come from Cuba to help them prepare for what they knew was going to be a difficult time for their isolated communities, given that they didn't themselves have a very strong healthcare system protecting them. So once we saw that, we said, well, wait a moment. The Council of Canadians, we're interested in human rights. We're interested in Indigenous peoples. We're interested in water questions, and we're interested in trade questions, international components. So we felt that we should send a letter to Deputy Prime Minister Freeland and asking her to please review that decision and hopefully reverse it. So that was in April of last year. We heard nothing back from her or her office. So a couple of months on, we got back talking about this, and we decided, well, Canada being now the only country that has actually formally refused Cuban medical help, that leaves a bit of a black eye. Why don't we, as a local group, start a process to get them nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize? So that's how it sort of got going. Of course, we're just located in Northumberland / Cobourg, and so we needed help to go much further. And what we did is we were able to put forward a resolution at the annual Council of Canadians, the national meeting held in June of last year. And it was approved by a big majority of the members. There were several hundred on the call. And we got support from the staff to go ahead with this.
Why Cuba? Why did the First Nations reach out to Cuba? Why didn't they turn to the Canadian government or their provincial government to do this?
Well, interestingly enough, Rob, early 2020, a delegation of indigenous leaders from Manitoba had actually gone to Cuba. Just when the first inklings that we as a global community were going to be facing something very serious soon, they actually traveled to Cuba. They had heard about the fact that Cuba has a training program for medics, doctors and nurses in the whole area of pandemics and natural disasters. This actually was begun. The Cubans foresaw that we were heading into a millennium with climate change bringing an increasing number of crises to be faced by various countries and around the world. And they set up a training session, particularly in the health field, because they knew that Ebola, SARS, and other things were coming our way, which they did. And they responded to them in Africa and SARS in the Americas as well. And so they were in an amazing position, having more than 4,000 trained medics in pandemic care to be able to respond to countries that reached out to them. Because in their own situations, they had medical systems that were fragile. And in the case of Italy, which was one of the first countries last year to call on the Cubans, if you could remember, they were very hard hit in the Lombardy district in about March, April of last year. Their ICU units were overwhelmed, and they just didn't have enough doctors to care for the number of critically ill patients from COVID-19 at that time. They called in a major contingent of the Cubans, who immediately set about helping, supporting the frontline medical workers in Italy in that northern area of the country. Like that, Rob, in the course of the year, many countries have reached out to Cuba. In fact, a total of 40 countries have reached out to them to send contingents, and they have. They have sent contingents. This is usually an interim situation, right? They're not planning to stay for long, but they go because things spiral out of control, and beds in hospitals, et cetera, become non-existent for people who, the increasing number of people who catch the COVID-19. So they have sent these contingents from what they call the overall effort, Rob, is called the Henry Reeve Brigade, named after a U.S. soldier that fought alongside the Cubans back in the war against Spain back in the 1800s. And so they can send contingents, and they have. Most recently, just to give you a sense of what's going on, both Mexico City and Panama City have actually had a situation in January, February, where they didn't have enough doctors and nurses who weren't themselves either sick or extremely stressed out to handle the COVID cases they were facing in those two cities. So they called in the Cubans. The Cubans sent 500 doctors, medics, to Mexico City for a two-month period or so. And now many of them have just returned back to Cuba. But it gives you a sense of their capabilities.
You talk about the Northumberland chapter of the Council of Canadians. So who are the Council of Canadians?
So the Council of Canadians was formed primarily in the late 1980s. And the big thing back then, along with some other Canadian organizations, unions and others, was the question of the coming of free trade. The one with the United States in the late 80s first, the acronym is here, but that was called CUFTA, Canada-the U.S. Free Trade Agreement, and then that was followed shortly thereafter in the early 90s by the North America Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. So during that time period, the Council of Canadians was one of the key organizations setting up opposing that type of free trade, which we call sort of the neoliberal free trade, which is mainly going to benefit big corporations and not necessarily the citizens of the countries involved, and trying to posit that trade is good, but there's another type of trade which we should actually be looking at. So with that sort of double focus, that's when the Council of Canadians was launched. You may have heard of Maud Barlow. She is one of the key founders of the Council of Canadians. Has been a long time chair or honorary chair of the council, and so she's written several books related to issues that the Council of Canadians have taken forward over the years. So that's where it started. It grew during the 90s quite precipitously. So the council now has more, I'm not quite sure about the exact number, Rob, but it's something in excess of 150,000 members across the country, and has about some 42 or 43 chapters, just like the Northumberland chapter, spread out around the country.
Now, I'd like to go back and start talking about denomination itself. So you said earlier that the government did not change its mind about inviting the Cubans to come, and your group decided here in Northumberland that it wanted to nominate this group of medics for a Nobel Peace Prize. Can you tell us the process by which that discussion took and grew and moved forward?
Yes, I alluded to it because we were, I guess, a little bit put out, if I can use that terminology, by the fact that we never got a response from the federal government to our request for them to review the rejection of the request coming from First Nations in Manitoba. And that was the sort of what was a catalyst for us to say, okay, obviously, for whatever reason, the federal government is not going to respond to us, and they've also tried to, you know, it's given a bit of black eye to the Cubans being that, and to us, since it's the only country in the world that has rejected Cuban doctors requested by their citizens. So let's do something about that so that we can show to a wider public that, in fact, the Cubans are doing an amazing job of care, not only at home domestically, but also internationally, caring for other people. There's no other country in the world that's showing this level of care for themselves, their own people, but also internationally. So that's what got it. We were in discussions here. We passed it through the annual general meeting in Ottawa. Actually, it was on Zoom last June. Got a very good response from the larger membership, and so we decided, okay, we'll go ahead. And the first thing we had to do, Rob, is to find a nominator, because as it turns out, the rules are very strict. You can't have any Jane Blow or Rick Arnold nominating for a Nobel Peace Prize. It has to be, for instance, a professor has still tenure in a university. They can nominate. It can be an elected representative in Parliament. They can nominate. And it can be a former Nobel Peace Prize winner. They can nominate. But it was really quite a restricted field as to who could do it. So we set about, right after the meeting, the Zoom meeting was over, we set about saying, okay, let's see who we can reach out to out there who would do this. So actually, we had really good luck. I knew of a professor at Dalhousie University who teaches Latin American studies and Spanish. And so I reached out to him, not actually thinking that he might do it, but knowing that he had quite good contacts, and he knew actually himself quite a bit about Cuba, to give us some advice as to how to proceed. And he said, well, you know what? I could do it.
You have argued in some articles that Cuban expertise could be used to help Canadian doctors.
Yes.
And I've done interviews with a local doctor, and he described the international network of expertise being used here in Northumberland. And I assume the same expertise is being used by all doctors all over the world. Why do you think what Cuba has to offer is better than what our local doctors are getting and is available to doctors across the country?
Yeah, maybe I would reframe that question slightly, Rob. I don't think it's better per se. I think that, let me just take the current situation we're in now. We have, two or three variants loose in Canada now. And in Ontario, I think that I'm hearing now that the variants are actually becoming the greatest percentage of new infections in our province. What I'm also deducing from what I'm reading is that there are more younger people and more people in general getting sick, seriously sick, from these new variants, that the ICU units that barely were able to deal with the second wave back in January, February, will be overrun shortly with the number of patients. So you probably heard that one of the things Ontario government did only 3 or 4 days ago was to say that we're going to start moving these critically ill patients around Ontario, and we will do it against the will of the patients and the families who live near to the hospitals where the patients may be currently found. I think this is draconian. I think it's drastic, and I think it's unnecessary. It's true that the frontline workers in Canada, healthcare workers in Canada, are very experienced professionals. They've been at this now for more than a year. Some of them have caught COVID-19 in the process. Others have been stretched out from all the overtime that they're putting in to try to deal with the patients. I think that the Cubans now, in a different context from the one that I mentioned to you back last year with the indigenous populations, could be invited to come, for instance, to Ontario and bolster our frontline workers in this following way to stop this sending of patients around against their will to other hospitals that may be far away from the family members. They could, as Sunnybrook in Toronto has already done, set up a field hospital in the grounds. Most of these hospitals, the one here in Northumberland, for instance, have ground space in which field hospitals can be erected in fairly short time. And they could then invite Cuba to send pandemic-trained doctors and nurses to help staff these extra ICU units that are going to be needed within probably 2 weeks or so. So here is one very concrete way in which Cuba could help, and it's not that the Cubans are better necessarily. It's that they are trained, and we've run out, or we've exhausted our frontline people, and we need help. And they're there. Several hundred of them have just returned from Mexico City, where they've helped out to bring that situation into, if not control, some sort of stability. I just don't understand why an invitation has not been issued to the Cubans to help out for an interim period of time, be it 1 or 2 months. They've got the skills. The language is no problem. They've dealt with languages in 40 countries, and medical language, as you know, is often English. So many of the doctors from Cuba speak English. So that's no problem. Whether or not they have to go through some period of control when they come into Canada, probably they do. But if they were invited now, when the situation gets difficult, particularly in about 2 to 3 weeks' time, they will have gone through the isolation necessary, and they would be ready to help to staff these. What I'm suggesting is the route that Ontario should go is to set up some of these field hospitals, as has happened in Italy, as has happened in other countries around the world.
Now, what's next then for the Nobel nomination? Where does the process go from here, and what role will Northumberland chapter be playing?
Well, there is a period, a time period, to enter the nominations, and that runs from October through to the end of January. So that time period now is over. There can be no new nominations, but as I mentioned to you before, approximately 50 nominations have come in from countries all over the world.
Cuba has a lot of stigmatism surrounding it, and politicians obviously like to think about the political side of any decision. Is it really that surprising that the federal and the provincial governments are not inviting the Cubans to come up here and assist us because of the potential political fallout due to some of the stereotypical or the stigmatized ideas some people have in this country about Cuba and what it represents?
Well, I don't know how much time you have here, Rob, but that is a very, very big, juicy question, if I could say that.
Can you give us a short answer?
I'll try to be short. Let me just say, of course, we had Trump, right, for the first part of COVID-19 sitting in Washington. Canada was under fire from Trump. They didn't want to rock the boat. Trump, at one point in February, the State Department sent out messages to all sorts of countries in the Americas saying, we suggest you don't invite any Cubans to come, and if you do, we will think about sanctions against you. Well, fortunately, most Caribbean and Latin American countries that had the Cubans come but got that message, they had them come anyway. But Canada did not. We do have a bigger problem here. Partly, I guess, we were under the thumb of Trump at the time. But now with Biden, the situation has changed in Washington. I think that Canada would have more freedom to be able to express some other opinion about how the Cubans have interacted with the situation over the last 12 months. Yes, to answer your question, I am not totally surprised, particularly the conservative premiers would not want to see a Cuban delegation come to Canada. But I think it's more than just a style of government that is not favored by, particularly in conservative areas. But it's got to do also with two or three other things, Rob. One is that I'm talking about some of our healthcare providing leaders as well as politicians, we cannot countenance that a small third world island country could possibly have anything to help us with. It's just a blind spot and a feeling that, you know, somehow we'd be embarrassed if we actually invited Cubans to come here and help us out, because after all, we've got a stellar healthcare system. How is it possible that another small island country like that has anything to teach us?
Rick, if you are a betting man, what do you think your chances are of being successful?
Good question, Rob. If I were a betting man, I think it would be Cuba's remarkable efforts over the last year would be up there. I think it will be one of the finalists, if you will, for that panel to consider. Obviously, I hope that it is the winner, but I'm very sure that there has been no other effort anywhere in the world comparable to the care being provided by thousands of Cuban doctors for people who've been sick in all sorts of countries from Europe, Africa, Asia, and Latin America. And the development by this embargoed country of vaccines, which will soon be out, that whole process was happening last year as well. I think when the Oslo panel looks at the contribution that this one country has made, saving lives, they've attended more than a million people over this time period in other countries, I think it's going to be very, very high on their selection list. Obviously, we're hoping that it will be the one selected. The other option, I guess, Rob, is the actual big pharma companies themselves, who, you know, received hundreds of millions of dollars of public funds to go ahead and develop some of the vaccines that are on that we're seeing now. That, I guess, is a possibility as well, although a lot of their work and a lot of what we're seeing now is actually outside of the 2021 framework for last year. So I still believe that the Cuban nomination is one of the ones that is the most likely to win.
Rick Arnold, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Rob, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was Rick Arnold, a board member from the Northumberland chapter of the Council of Canadians, talking about the nomination of the Henry Reeve Brigade for a Nobel Peace Prize. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.